Hi, I'm Ryan Meeks, and after years of trying to make life work as a struggling artist, independent filmmaker, and musician, I thought to myself, hey self, wouldn't it be helpful to ask other artists how they're finding their path in this world? And so now, that's exactly what I'm doing on a bi-weekly basis. Welcome to The Path of Art. Welcome to The Path of Art. I'm Ryan Meeks, and today we have a filmmaker from L.A. His name is Mali Bonner. Now, he has made a film recently. Was it last year that you made the film?
Yeah, well, it came out in 2021, which was, you know, just last year.
And so I went to a release of it, a screening of it this year. So it was a film about an African-American pioneer that came across with the LDS Church and all the stuff that he helped with. To get them here to winter quarters and even when settling in the valley. It was a fascinating film. But also, Mali, you're a musician, right?
I am. Yeah, that's my background, music.
So do you write for your family? I know your family has a lot of music behind them. Your family does things. I know your brother, you have a brother that's a producer. You have a brother that does some of his own singing. So your music is, do you write a lot for your family, and what else do you do with it?
Well, okay. So I live in Los Angeles, and you know, my job is preparing pop artists and other recording artists, getting them ready for their recording sessions. So their album recording. So I'll be in the studio. I'm the guy saying, do it again, sing it better type thing. And then I also get them ready for their live shows and tours. So determining what the order of their set is going to be. And then I also write music as well. And so, in Los Angeles, it's artists like Camila Cabello and Ariana Grande, Stevie Wonder right now working on his gospel album, so stuff like that.
That's amazing. And so what title would that be? Is that a producer title, or is it what is that?
It varies. They call me a vocal director. So it's like anything that has to do with the voice, then I'm in. You know, so it just depends on the artist and what they need.
So you also mentioned that you're a songwriter. So what do you call yourself? Is it just under Mali? Is that what your artist name is?
Yeah, well, so I don't even see myself as an artist, even though on the soundtrack for the Green Flake movie, I'm singing the songs, but I develop artists. And so my title is vocal director. So I prepare other artists for their shows, tours, and whatever else, you know. So artists, please help me know. I'm not that guy.
When you watch the film, the people that are listening, when you watch it, the soundtrack's amazing. Like, you've got a great voice. Wow. and the music just is phenomenal. It really takes the film to another level.
Thank you so much.
And so you decided that you needed to make this film. I mean, what kind of prompted that?
Yeah, it was, you know, the B1 celebration. So that was, the church put on this celebration of the 40th anniversary of the priesthood being given to all men, or the priesthood ban being lifted, right? And this is in 2018. And our family was asked to sing, the Bonner family. And so at that celebration, at this, they had like different snippets of history lessons of different black pioneers, early black pioneers. And it was some people I'd heard of, Elijah Abel, I'd heard of him. I know a little bit about him. Priesthood, yeah. Jane Manning James, yes, I know that. But then there was other people, Green Flake, who I'd never heard of. And then to hear that there were enslaved members of the church, it kind of shook me that I didn't know these things. And I felt like, my goodness, I should know these things. Me being black in the church, I should know this so that I can help answer some of the tough questions that do come my way. And so that kind of sparked something in me to make sure that I knew everything I could know. So I met with historians, and, you know, they send me books and journal entries, and reading quickly turned into writing. And over the next month, I had 200 pages and 10 songs. And that's when I was like, oh my gosh, I think this is a movie.
And so did you write the songs thinking that it would be a movie, or did you just get inspired to write these songs and then it became correct in your mind that this would be a film?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, because I had never thought about making a film. I'd never went to school for film. Never, I just like going to the movies just like everybody else. But during the process of me learning about the history, writing music was my outlet because it was heavy stuff. You know, it was emotional things I was learning. And so I was just writing music as therapy. And so it really wasn't until near the end of that month. And I was literally barely sleeping because I just wanted to get back into it and reading and writing. And it wasn't until near the end that I realized I had a body of work that needed to be told on film.
So does that shift your focus from what you are as a voice director to being a filmmaker now?
Yeah, I mean, people said, okay, we'll see if you catch the bug. And I was like, catch the bug? What is that? And then I caught the bug.
The filmmaking bug,
yeah,
or something?
It got me. Yeah. So it definitely is a big part of what I'm going to be doing moving forward, for sure, because I did realize that making a movie is a hard thing and it takes a lot of work. But even still, it was something I was very capable of doing. So this big, hard thing I've never done before, I was able to do it and do it quickly. And I thought, okay, it came naturally, and I wanted to now spend more time in this space, and so I'm doing that.
So that must be pretty amazing, being a voice director for people like Stevie Wonder and Camila Cabello. I mean, what is your day to day like on that?
Yeah, I mean, each artist is different, you know. So for Camila, it was from the beginning of her career. So right after she did the X Factor and was in this group, Fifth Harmony, my job was to make sure that the group can sound as good as they can sound and make sure that the order of the show is something that vocally they can handle. And then I wrote one song for Fifth Harmony while they're in the group. And then Camila went on and did her solo thing. And then Stevie Wonder, it's different. It's not for his shows or tours or anything else, but I'm writing music for him. He actually heard songs from the Green Flake movie before it came out. And that's when he reached out to me. Yeah. And so that was a really special thing to sit there and talk to Stevie Wonder about early Black pioneers in the church and then write music, you know?
So it turned into an opportunity for you to write more music.
It did. Yeah, it did.
And so what is that like, writing music for Stevie? Are you writing it with him? Is it like a joint thing, or are you writing it for him to add stuff to? How is that working?
Yeah, it's with. I mean, he has a plethora of ideas, you know, so we'll spend time talking and talking about Black history in America, talking about Black history in the church, talking about our beliefs. We just kind of spend time, you know, talking, and then it'll go into an idea that he has, and he'll pull out an instrument that he just picked up in Japan, and he mastered it within weeks. And so now he's playing this new instrument and this idea, and then my job is to kind of take this idea and formulate it into a structured song. And so I just kind of try to grab the ideas as he's pumping them out, because he's brilliant, a genius, you know. And so I just try to organize them and create a structured song.
Are there any similarities, do you think, between songwriting and filmmaking? I come from a background of music as well. My dad was a musician, and I'm nowhere on any level that's known at all, but I've been writing music for a long time. And what are some similarities that you see between songwriting and creating a film?
Well, I'll say, first off, the intangible similarities are that you just feel comfortable. Like, for me to be someone who's never been to film school, who's never thought of directing or writing a film, to be able to do that, get on set, and be comfortable directing people, that has to connect to my experiences in music. And so my music experience is helping other artists be their most authentic self. So helping performers be their most believable self to their audience. And so that translates right into directing. You know, as I'm working with actors, making sure that they are their most natural self on camera. So that felt easy. And then with songwriting, you know, I'll sit down with an artist and we'll spend a half a day together just talking about them and what this song is going to be about, and then getting it all into this 2.5, 3.5 minutes I found that with a film, I have more time to tell the story. That's easier for me than making the whole story fit in this 3.5 minute thing. And I don't have to rhyme, and there's no melody. So it was just, it came naturally.
I would say there's a type of thematic rhyming that happens, you know, with foreshadowing and whatnot. So there's some similarities between them that are very strong. But yeah, you definitely have a lot more time. So whereas songwriting, I think the stories are kind of, they're a little bit more abstract because of that. Would you say?
Yeah. I mean, you have to take somebody, first of all, you have to get them invested so early on in the song. Within those first few seconds, you know, with film, you have minutes to draw them in. You have seconds with the song, and then take them short through a short journey without letting them feel like you just dropped them off somewhere. If there has to be a beginning and an end in this 3 minute window. And so elaborating on that into writing a film, it's wonderful. It's incredible to be able to draw a whole character out and take someone through that journey. It's been an incredible experience.
Yeah. And so when you were writing these songs about Green Flake, were you writing them kind of as each song was kind of a part of his life? And that's kind of what led it into a film story?
No, it was like, yeah, the songs were the emotional journey I was going through at the time. So what I was feeling like as I was reading this letter that talked about Green Flake, you know, from, because when we're talking about early Black pioneers, there's not, especially enslaved pioneers, you're not going to have anything written. You know, they would be, their life would be terrible for them had they been caught writing or reading. You know, and so you don't have journals and letters from these enslaved pioneers. So I'm reading journal entries from other pioneers, free pioneers, white pioneers, right? And you're catching pieces of names and then putting these stories together. It was like putting this Tetris puzzle together, weaving these stories of letters and censuses to create what his life was. And so it was just a fascinating, fascinating journey.
So what kind of reception have you received from this film?
Yeah, I mean, I was nervous after making the film because I thought, well, Black people are going to love it, and white people are going to hate it, or white people are going to love it and Black people are going to hate it, or church folks are going to love it and non-members are going to hate it, or vice versa. I just thought it was going to be one or the other, but I didn't know how it was going to fall. And it was just... I'm still so surprised, but I'm also not surprised because the spirit of the film, it has connected with everyone, with my Black brothers and sisters, my white brothers and sisters, members, non-members. You know, I released it to film festivals outside of Utah. I didn't release it in Utah to any of the Utah film festivals. So it was Los Angeles and Rome and Istanbul and London, and it won Best Film in all of those film festivals. And so you have thousands of films, and Green Flake, his name is Green Flake, was winning Best Film. And that was fascinating to me, that this story of quote-unquote Mormon culture was able to transcend religion and connect with just humanity. And so it did the same thing with members of the church. They connected with it as well. So it's been so well received.
That's amazing. Have you gotten any questions about the church since this has gone out? It didn't go out, you know, in, like you said, you didn't go to any festivals in Utah, but at the other festivals, did that bring, you know, people to ask you questions about the church?
It did. You know, this is the tricky part. And I mean, no one's ever asked that question, so I appreciate you asking that. This film was released in the height of racial tensions. This is, you know, post George Floyd. So this is late 2020s when it was started going into film festivals, right? And so you have folks who want justice across the board, looking for it, you know? And so if you can imagine, non-members of the church are like, I knew it. Those Mormon folks in the Mormon church, And there was, so that, is that the, and I was like, then I had to explain. Well, no, it's not the Mormon church enslaving people. It was
people in the church.
We're talking about American history and slavery. Yeah. And so this is, these are people who were American, who were also converted to the church. So it didn't, slavery did not end with religion. There were Christians, non-Christians that were engaging in this practice, and it didn't change when they were members of the church. And so, yes, you do have members who were enslaving other members and whatever else. And so it helped educate about American history. It helped educate about our church history and where we were and how far we've come. And that's the hard part, is if we don't talk about where we came from, then we can't even celebrate or acknowledge how far we've come. Instead, we're just looking at all of the worst parts of where we are today. You know, and yes, we should look at it and continue to push forward, but how can we gauge how far we've come if we don't tell the hard stories from the past?
And I think a good indicator was the unveiling of those statues at This Is the Place. And I think that your film had a big part to play in that. And that's kind of why that screening happened, was because it was to help commemorate that. Was that part of the reason that for the second screening this year?
Well, not initially. You know, initially making the film, I just wanted it out there. And then after it was doing so great in film festivals, it was just, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. Let's get a picture by the monuments, you know, is what I was thinking. And because I'm here in California, I know that Utah loves its monuments. I'm like, I'm sure, I just assume that there were monuments of these black pioneers that came in. Green Flake, 19-year-old enslaved pioneer who drove the first wagon. Surely there's a statue of him. And I wanted to get a selfie with the cast and the crew, and that's when I learned that there wasn't. And so, and this was in 2021. And so that's when I realized that every penny of profit had to go towards changing that, rectifying that, making sure that there was representation of these black pioneers. And so the film was the catalyst to leading to that monument dedication.
I think that's a huge thing to push forward, is that recognition of these pioneers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and of course, I mean, the film was a small piece of what was needed to be raised to make those monuments, because they're incredible. So there were some really amazing philanthropic people that were like, let's do this. And they made sure that it was going to be the best that it could be. And it is. It's just absolutely stunning.
So we're going to take a quick break here. We've learned a lot about Mauli and some of the great work that he's doing. When we come back, we're going to talk about his past and just how he's journeyed, how he's come along this path of art in his own way. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Path of Art. We're here with Mauli Bonner, and we've gone over his film Green Flake and his music career. And now I'd like to just dive into how you got started in your creative path.
Yeah, I mean, well, so I come from a musical family. I have 7 siblings, so there's 4 boys and 4 girls. And my mom was the gospel choir director. Even though she was a member of The Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints, she grew up in a Baptist church. So she was the soloist and the director of the choir in the Baptist church, and also bringing us to the Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints. And we were doing both. So we came from both worlds.
Oh, wow.
And so music, music has always been such a big part of our lives. And so that was at a very, very young age. And so I couldn't get away from it if I tried. But it wasn't until I came to LA that I realized that I could utilize what my mom had taught me as a child with the voice, because we learned how to teach. We learned everything about the voice and how it works. I had no idea I was going to use that until I came to Los Angeles and was able to help other artists. And so then management companies and record labels would reach out to me to do just that. And film, like I mentioned earlier, it was not on my radar at all. And so we were going to film, it was the day before, we're about to do the first day on set. And I go to lay down, and I had just finished I had like maybe 3 hours of rest to get in. We got the locations, the crew, the cast, okay, great, hotels booked, paperwork signed, okay, cool. I'm about to lay down, and then I was like, oh no, I didn't book a director. And I had forgotten, out of all the things, to book a director. And so I wasn't planning on directing until the day before. And so I did what everybody else does. All this young generation, go on YouTube.
YouTube, yep.
So I went on YouTube. When to say action, when to say cut. And so I'm looking at the, okay, got it. Yeah, rolling camera, got it. You know, so I get on set and I'm just a fish out of water. I'm not sure what's happening until action. And then it was like I was home. I knew exactly what to do. It's incredible.
Did anything else that, you know, growing up, you know, with what your mom taught you and even in being in that duality of the two different churches? I mean, in general, like, you know, I think people get along. But was there anything that came out of that that helped you grow your career in the sense of just like, you know, learning how to, you know, to deal with diverse environments?
I think you nailed it right there. Learning to to navigate diverse environments, because it was just that. You know, for me, my whole life has been that. You know, I had lived in some really tough neighborhoods, and I've lived in some great neighborhoods. I've been to the worst schools. I've been to the best private schools. You know, I've been to going to Baptist church and then going, you know, where you're dancing and praising and shouting for the Lord. And then you come to the LDS church and it's reverence and silence and meditation, you know. And so navigating those two worlds is something that I've always done, because those are the worlds that I've lived in. And so I've never been uncomfortable being in a new space or feeling like, gosh, I haven't done this before. Am I the only one? Or that's what I've always known. So I definitely was not, there was no fear there for that.
So when you started off your music career, I mean, what would you consider your first success?
I think, okay, so this was the journey of what happened. Long story short, I was in California and I was in a man group, not a boy band, because I don't do boy bands. My band was a man group. And I just knew that, like, yeah, we're going to be huge. We're going to be famous. And, you know, and my girlfriend at the time, she's my wife now, my girlfriend at the time was saying, so do you have a backup plan? And I'm like, backup plan? Have you heard my group? You're welcome. Like, get on board, you know? And she's like, okay, well, let me just try to help you along. And so she got me a resume together and had me and had me go to these different, I want to say audition, but it's not an audition. I don't even know what you guys call them, you know, for your regular jobs. And I'm like, I go and I'm teaching third graders how to clap on time. And then that led to me working with this pop school and working with artists there. And then there was a reality show, that they needed an on-camera vocal coach. And I went and auditioned for that, and they loved me. And I was like, great. And so my job was to make sure that the artist could last all the way through and decide what songs they're going to sing. And so I did that for a number of shows. So I've worked on just about every reality show you can think of, I probably worked on, and that was the beginning of it. And then it led to other pop artists.
And wow, so it seems like, I mean, you're just had a good streak going, you know, throughout your career. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
does that come from connections, or, I mean, I know talent, you have to be talented, but do connections play a part in that? And do relationships, I guess is what I'm saying. Do relationships play a big part in that?
Okay. So here's the thing. The truth is connections and relationships are more important than the talent. Oh. That is what's most important. But for my journey, it wasn't. But if I'm telling somebody else, I've witnessed it, that I have people working on this job or this artist and they shouldn't be there, but they're the friend of whoever or the cousin of whoever or a favor. And that happens all the time. For me, what got me through my journey is I've always known what needs to be. Like, I always feel like I know how things should be. And that is rare most people are indecisive or don't want to take the fall.
Right.
You know, and they kind of like want to ask the room and like go with the majority.
Right.
But
or
I
they
was
have
always someone who was like, yeah.
Or
yeah,
they have too many interests, right?
Yeah, 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 mm-hmm. exactly. And so I just found that, like you were saying, I've had a long streak of luck where I was right with this call with this artist. I was right with this show, right with this direction, right with this style for this artist, choosing this artist. Yes, they were the ones who went on. And, you know, and so knowing if you have a belief that you feel like you know what should be, you got to go with it. You've got to go with it because that's always paid off for me.
So when did that hit you? Was that something you've always had, or did that hit you at a certain point in time where you knew what you wanted to do?
The personality trait of feeling like I always know what should be done is something that's always been with me. I got that from my mom. You know, she always had knew exactly what, whether from the outside world it looks like the right thing or not, there was zero question with her what the next steps were for her and her family. My mom really led our family that way, you know, and my dad was like the consistent, solid piece, and my mom was driving us forward. And that's always been a part of me, is knowing what needed to be done. So like with this movie, his name is Green Flake, I just knew after I finished learning, like, this is a film, I need to make it. And we need to make it in 3 months. Like, okay, 3 months we're going to be shooting. And then people are like, well, no, 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 that's not the way it works. You have to, I'm like, oh, no, 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 that's the way this is going to work. And I just knew that that's what needed to happen. And so I've always been that way.
The way you're explaining it is kind of not necessarily like you have a vision of I'm going to be this and I need to become this. It's more as when things hit you, you have this ability to decide this is what needs to happen for me. Is that kind of how you're explaining it? So
that's exactly what it is. But here's the thing though, when you do act on what you think you're supposed to be doing, people follow, they fall in line. You know, people want to follow what they believe is going to happen. And so if you truly are moving in that direction, then it's not so hard to tell, how am I going to get this person? How am I going to get that? No, you just get moving and make sure that you finish the job and people will fall in line. And that's what's happened.
Would you say that there was much of a conflict, if any at all, when you decided, hey, I need to do a film now? And now that you're thinking of going down that road, is there ever that conflict in your mind between filmmaker and music maker?
No, I haven't seen the struggles that I've had to get to this point until I look back. And then I'm like, oh, look at that. You see the buildings falling behind you. And I'm like, wow, I had no idea. You know, like I've always been so focused on what I needed to get done that a door closed was not a door closed. It was just needed to be opened, you know, open it or move and open this door, keep moving, shift, move, boom, adjust, you know. And so if I did focus on the struggles or the nose or the setbacks, I'm sure I would have been paralyzed, but I didn't even notice them at the time.
That's really good insight there. Cause I mean, I think that happens a lot. People just get paralyzed with how much they have to do. And then also just how much is going wrong for them. And moving forward, that's quite a good ability to have, to just move through all that. And so on that subject, I mean, you decided to do this film. His name is Green Flake. And I mean, how did doors start opening for you?
Well, there were miracles. There were miracles. I knew that what I needed to do for this film and telling this story, I needed the support of the church. Otherwise, I think that the normal saint might look and say, like, wait, is this okay? Can I watch this? Is the church okay with this? Like, we've never talked about that, you know? And people wouldn't know how to receive it. And so I wasn't sure how that was going to happen until I did a screening and I'm in Salt Lake City and I see Elder Razban and his wife walking on the street and they have masks on. And so I was just kind of guessing, but wow. So I went and approached him and I told him, hey, I made this movie and this monument, but it has to be, I need the support of you and Temple Square and all the things that needs. And he's like, okay. Well, let's slow down. Write me a letter. I'm like, letter? Well, I'm here now. Let's like, okay, well, we need official document. I'm like, okay. And so we took a picture. I wrote the letter. And the next week I had another, it was a concert that I was doing to promote the release of the film. And then that literally 7 days later, I see a man walking. I'm like, gosh, that looks like Elder Gong. And it was Elder Gong. I pull over and I'm like, hey, my name is Mowley. And I get to talking to him. And he's like, oh, yes, we were just talking about you this week. I'm like, oh, so you know. So, yeah, the film and everything. Love it. Wonderful what you're doing. These things take time, but thank you. Keep going. I'm like, okay. And then the following week, I felt an impression to be in Salt Lake again. This is now Friday, the next Friday and the third Friday.
So you just went up to Salt Lake and just kind of hung out?
This is the thing. Yes. Well, here's the thing. At 5:30, I met those two apostles at 5:32. And then I felt this spiritual impression that I needed to be there again at Friday at 5:32. And so long story short, I tell my wife I have a meeting and she's like, with who? And I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, okay, whatever. You know, and I go fly to Salt Lake and I'm standing there in the rain. It's pouring rain and there's nobody outside and it's 5:30. And I'm like, oh my gosh, come on. And then 5:32, click. And then a man pulls up and a man in a suit gets out of the car and stands under a tree about 20 yards from me. And it's just me and him on the whole street, nobody out. And he's standing under the tree like I am, shading from the rain. And I go up to him and I talk to him and it's Bishop Kase, you know, it's the presiding bishop of the church. And we talk about the film and he tells me everything that they've learned and what they love. And this is wonderful. Like what they've learned from what I'm doing, not like I'm teaching them, but like, you know, what they've learned about my journey. And he was just so happy about it. And he said it feels like love. And I'll never forget that. And he said, you know, and that's a hard thing to do when you're talking about race and enslavement and priesthood and black people in the church, for it to feel like love, that's not normal. But these miracles were all a part of my journey. And so not everyone's going to have these massive miracles like that, but there will be miracles that will show you that the Lord is directing your path, and we have to be aware of those.
I mean, I live in the Salt Lake area, and I never run into an apostle or anyone from the church. I mean, I know, you know, they live around in various areas, but this just doesn't happen. It's not like a normal thing. You just go up there and be like, I'm going to go up there. And then you run into an apostle or something. So that is pretty cool. that's an amazing story. So, I mean, wow. Was there any point though, during this journey of making this film, that it looked like it might not work out?
Oh, I mean, honestly, every day looked like it was not going to work out, but it didn't change the fact that it was going to work out. Like what it looked like didn't matter. Like, yes, of course it looked like it's not going to work out when it's 3 weeks before we're about to shoot. I don't have a crew. I don't have a location. Because the location I was going to have is now gone because I had a certain setup. The equipment that I was going to use from one of my clients, he can't because now it's stuck. The equipment's stuck in Russia. It all looked like, you know, and this was every day there was something. But that didn't change the fact that it's going to happen. It's just, okay, then there must be another something. Okay. So I just had to keep shifting and adjusting and moving forward. And so just because it looks like it's not going to happen doesn't mean it's not. It just means that's the journey, because you cannot judge whether or not you're going to get there by how hard the path is to get there. It shouldn't be easy.
What would you say got you through all of that?
I think what got me through the hard days, things where it looked like nothing is going to happen, it's all going to fall apart. How am I going to, you know... I had zero money raised at the time. I just had a promise of $25,000 3 weeks before. About how? What got me through that was knowing that these stories need to be told, and that there's brothers and sisters that look like me, that look like Brigham Young, that look like Green Flake, you know, like all the whole spectrum, and descendants everywhere from within want this. We're all in this together. And so it's hard work. It's unity that we all want. We all want to tell these stories. We want to learn more, especially recently. We're all in a space where we want to know more. What haven't I seen? What was I missing? And so knowing that I had brothers and sisters of all cultures and races that wanted these stories to be told was my motivation. It gave me peace because I wasn't alone. And it wasn't just black people doing black stories. It was white, black, and everything in between pushing to make this a reality. So that's what strengthened me.
Well, and I can tell you that after watching your film, that what the presiding bishop said...
It feels like love, yeah.
That's exactly what I felt throughout the film. I mean, as you said, it had things in it that we needed to know about. It's stuff we need to know. But the whole thing just had a loving tone. And when it was over, that's that's what I felt was love.
That means so much. Absolutely. That means so much because, you know, I wanted to make sure that in the end, after the film was over, I didn't want to make anybody feel whatever. Let them have their own experience and sit and talk with their family or friend. And I just hope that everyone has the opportunity to see the movie because it just opens a whole door, a whole, you know, like there's a whole spectrum of things we hadn't known about. And it does fill us with love and it brings us closer together. I don't know how we're able to talk about these hard things and it brings us closer together, but it's doing it. And so, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Mally. It's just been a pleasure talking with you and even reminiscing about your film. I mean, it's just brought back good emotions, you know, and I really appreciate you coming on. What is in the future for you?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. You know, to our earlier conversation in the beginning, I have caught the bug. You know, there are more stories to be told, and telling them through film and music is a way that the spirit can live in the message. And I'll be telling more stories. Right now, my focus is Elijah Abel. Elijah Abel being one of the first priesthood holders in the early church in the 1830s, he held the priesthood. And so we're going to follow his life and how... Did he lose the priesthood? Did he keep the priesthood? When did it go away? When did it come back? The whys? All that can be answered through following his life. So
for our listeners out there, where can they find Green Flake?
Okay, so you can get the movie at greenflakemovie.com. There'll be a link that can take you there, or just go to DeseretBook.com. So greenflakemovie.com will keep you up on all the things that I'm doing and what's next. And you can watch other performances and the dedication for the monument, all those things. But DeseretBook.com is selling the DVDs right now.
Awesome. So make sure that you guys see it. It's a fantastic movie. And again, it just fills you with great emotions. And thanks again, Mally, for coming on the show. It's been wonderful talking with you. This has been another episode of The Path of Art, and we'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to The Path of Art. If you or someone you know is creative and would like to tell your story, reach out to me at rmeeks@ksl.com. I might feature you on the show. If you liked our conversation, please make sure you follow the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. It really does help people to discover the show. Also, make sure you follow The Path of Art podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.